What is up, Cycling Oklahoma? Thanks for tuning in for another episode. Welcome to 2024. I'm not sure when you are listening to this, but we are off to a crazy cold start in 2024. And hopefully you're surviving and getting those miles in on the trainer or bundling up and getting out there on the trails and enjoying life. It is dirt season around Oklahoma, so hopefully you're doing some of the endurance mountain bike events or getting ready for some of the great gravel events that we have coming up. Definitely go and check out our Instagram at Cycling Oklahoma to see the events that are happening around Oklahoma, everywhere in Oklahoma. Every event that I can find, I try to put on there and at the first of the month to show the race calendar. So make sure that you're checking that out. And if you have comments, or sometimes I miss races because they are not on the sites that I'm looking at, so if that is the case, please make sure to send that over to me so we have a good accurate calendar for everyone that's looking at that. Also, any groups that are out there, any bike shops, or just people that are putting on group rides or races, make sure to tag Cycling Oklahoma on Instagram, and I will share that on the stories, because we definitely want to be a resource for people to find information for training, group rides, races, events, anything that's going on around Oklahoma that has to do with two wheels. We want to make sure people know about it. So make sure you tag Cycling Oklahoma on Instagram so we can get those updates out there. Today's episode is going to be a cool one. This is one that I had recorded, and it was perfect time to send it out. Some of our cycling people out there that are just roadies, maybe like, oh, another triathlete. Yeah, another triathlete. And he is a bad dude. DJ, man, I don't even know. This guy's won so many things and done so many different types of races, from adventure races to triathlons of every kind of discipline and distance. He's done a little of everything, to be honest with you. And him and his wife have basically a mini farm at their house with just the most wild collection of animals. So go follow DJ Snyder on Instagram, because you get to see all the animals and it is wonderful. But DJ is a super, super, super fast dude. He was an overall winner of Ironman Maryland a handful of years ago. So we're not talking just a fast guy locally. We're talking one of the fastest dudes out in the country. So, he's got a great story, and, he's incredibly intelligent and a very successful businessman. So he's got a little of everything going on, so I think you'll really enjoy this episode. So stay tuned. Even if you're a roadie, I think you're going to find some fun information, some fun stories here. And but reach out and follow DJ. Make sure you're tagging Cycling Oklahoma in any of your posts when it comes to something that you want to share with the community, and I'll do my best. I can't get every one of them shared, but I will do my best to get those shared on there. Hopefully we have some really fun things coming. I've started working on a project that I think all of our fans are going to love, but it's taken some time and I have been busy with training and work and all those kinds of things. So I'm doing it every chance I get. But because of the support of More Overhead Door, this project is going to be able to come to life. So I can't thank More Overhead Door enough for their support of Cycling Oklahoma and sponsoring the podcast, but also that money is just going right back into the community. I'm trying to put their money to good use and put their money to work in the cycling community to make it better here in Oklahoma. So More Overhead Door is supporting us. Please support them for anything garage door related. If you're looking for a new one for a new house to replace yours this winter, when it's miserably cold because your pain cave is in the garage and you need an insulated garage door, these are a great group of guys and gals to reach out to. If you have one of your springs break or something goes on with this winter weather, please reach out to More Overhead Door. They're supporting us. We want to support them. You can find them at moreoverheaddoor.com or reach out to them on the phone, 405-799-9214. moreoverheaddoor.com. But please support the people that are supporting us, and I hope you guys enjoy this one and stay warm out there, and hopefully we have a lot of really fun, cool episodes coming soon. All right, DJ, we're now recording, so we'll clean up the conversation a little bit. We won't be as personal, but I want you to, we've really tried to do this for like, I don't even know how long.
It's been a few months.
It's been a few months. So I'm glad we were finally able to sit down and do this and make it happen. So before we get into any of the good stories, because I have a couple of them I want to ask you about, give a quick elevator pitch of who you are and where you come from, and then let's get into the good stuff.
DJ Snyder, live in Edmond, Oklahoma, from Idaho. I started running cross country in high school and then really got into endurance sports in college.
Okay.
Just kind of trying to stay out of trouble. And, like I had some friends in Madison, Wisconsin. So I watched the Ironman in Wisconsin, and then I kind of like, oh, well, I can maybe run like a 3-hour marathon, and well, biking's not that hard, you know? And then like, I can pick up swimming, and you know, like 10 hours is pretty okay. And then like, I like said that out loud, and then I was like, okay, well, shoot.
Now you got to do it.
Now I got to back that up.
Uh-huh.
So then, found a coach, and this was like 2007. So it's been a few years. Mark Allen Online, Luis Vargas and Mark Allen like put together a program, and then just stuck to that program for the entire next year. And then like came and did like, I think it was 9:46 or something.
Your first one?
Yeah.
So, so hold on. Now, you've left out a lot of stuff, or you're just a freak.
There's been maybe a year or two left out in there.
Okay. So when did you start doing cross country? Like, what age were you?
So 16 and 18.
Okay.
Is when I. You were just 2 years cross country and track. So
did you do any ball sports or do anything else?
Grew up playing ice hockey.
Okay.
So that was like my big sport. And then skiing and
just
motorcycles.
Normal
and
outdoor stuff.
Yeah.
And then found running. And then it was in college that you found
BU Montana. It's like 2,000 person school, completely engineering focused. It's a dead mining town. So it's a whole bunch of like a lot of bars, a lot of drinking. And I was just like, maybe I want to try something a little bit different, stay athletic. Because at that time it was just like getting out and running up mountains and hiking and stuff and getting outside, riding a mountain bike.
Just like
that
playing.
Was like the lead into it. Yeah. Running. And then I ended up doing an ultra marathon like my sophomore year. So it was really just like, I had no idea what I was doing. This was like the beginning of Hammer Nutrition and Heed.
Uh-huh.
Like there wasn't any nutrition or anything out there to say. So it was really just kind of trial and error. And then building up mileage, you know, your knees get hurt. And so I picked up a bicycle and started mountain biking. And then it was really, then I saw Ironman Wisconsin.
Okay.
And that was, I think that was 2007. So that was probably sophomore year. And then 2008 is when I raced it. So I raced an Olympic in between.
Okay.
So I had a little experience.
At least you had like clue what transition was and stuff.
Yeah.
Golly. Your first full was a 9:47.
Something like that.
Dude, that is smoking. Did you realize at the time, like how fast that was?
No. I mean,
you're just like, I don't know.
Once I was like, okay, here's kind of my goal of what times and everything. Cause each one of those segments you can go, okay, I can handle 20 miles on a bike. That 20 miles an hour on a bike. It's not super, and that doesn't sound like a lot. And you kind of got to break it down. Well, that's on top of the swimming. And then you still got a marathon. So I could for sure run a 3-hour marathon.
So running you were naturally gifted in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a really good cross-country team. It was a good, like, sports environment. Everybody was supportive.
Other sports come pretty easy to you as well? Like, because sometimes, like, runners struggle with having power on the bike.
I did for a ton of years. Yeah. So, like, my bike always hung around, like, 515 forever and ever and ever.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put more of an emphasis on the bike in, like, 16 maybe.
Okay.
So, it was, like, 10 years later.
Gotcha.
But it is really, like, try to break down, like, take a step back, break down every sport. Because they are sports in themselves. Swimming is swimming. So, it's all focused on form and not effort. And that took, like, years to figure that out.
Right.
And then biking is, like, power. So again, starting back then, like Lance Armstrong had power and that was about it.
Right.
So it was all like my training was all based on heart rate.
Oh, okay.
So heart rate zones and then just trying to keep your nutrition in.
Gotcha.
So like those were the four sports. Nutrition.
Which one did you struggle with the most from the start?
Swimming was the biggest struggle, but then biking as far as the amount of time it makes up in that race was the bigger struggle.
Did you, cause like me, for one, I hate swimming. And so I don't do it enough because I'm like, oh, sucks. So I did it. Basically, I do it enough to not be like sucky, but I don't do it enough to actually get any better. It's kind of my thought in it. But Really, like, there was one year that I tried to put in a lot of effort into it, and I really just, I was putting in a lot of effort and seeing very minimal gains. And did you have that, or did you say, like, or were you kind of like, because some people are just like naturally athletic. Like Reed Foster is a perfect example. Whenever he started doing it and really paying attention, really working at it, like, he just really progressed quickly. Like, it just continued to get better quickly. Was it kind of that way for you, or did you kind of like beat your head against the wall for a while?
No, I beat my head against the wall for years. And it really was like taking a step back and slowing it down. Because at first I was like young, 20 years old and super athletic, and you can recover pretty quickly. So the efforts are really hard, but you're not getting faster.
Right.
And so that was a struggle. I just remember doing my first like 20 by 100s and just wanted to quit.
Yeah.
Like, it's completely anaerobic. It just feels horrible. And the times are just slow.
Right.
And then it was like, I think it was maybe 14 when it was, hey, take a step back and really just do it every single day.
Okay.
So in Houston, we lived in Houston for 5 or 6 years, and we found an endless pool on Craigslist, bought the endless pool, brought it back to the house. I said,
you have that at your house now?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And that, like, the endless pool was taller than the fence. And we used to, Kelsey and I used to put like an inner tube in there and then put the little floaty on, and we just like bounce around and like look into the neighbor's yard.
That's awesome. That's hilarious.
But it was like, you go for a bike, an hour bike, and then you just come back home and do 15 minutes cool down. And like that consistency every single day, like, went from, you know, an hour kind of on average for a swim down to like, I think I did 52 minutes in Mallorca.
Damn, that's fast.
But then now also I'm like back to that 30, 31 minute half Ironman. So you do kind of lose it. But now like my swim efforts are like half an hour.
Right.
Like, maybe a Monday or a Friday. Mm-hmm. And then it's just kind of slow focus on form, and really, like, I don't think I've done intervals in years. So it's just like the effort and then focusing on form for the swim.
Gotcha. So you had a 7 year roughly chunk of just like grinding it out before it finally clicked and really took off. Yeah. But you had to have swam decent at your very first race to do it, 9:47.
It was a 103. I was expecting like 115, but it was really like, what is it? The scrubs of like, where the guy's like, pick an apple from a tree, put it in your pocket, pick an apple from a tree. And so all I was doing is like catch and pull. It's like, that was my mantra, is just do a catch and pull. It's like, this arm doesn't move until this arm moves. And that's how I made it through that. And I remember looking down at the watch and going, holy shit.
How did that happen?
Yeah.
Man, that's awesome. Well, that's a good problem to have for that. Your first race would be in that level, in that world. How did you finish? Did you win your age group?
That'd be close. Man, there were some killer guys. There's like, I think a guy that did like 9:15 or something. And back then, that's pretty outrageous.
That's outrageous, especially at that young of an age group.
Yeah. So
that's
wild. I was third, but I still qualified for Kona.
Okay.
So they're like Madison, Wisconsin's a huge university. Yeah.
That's wild.
And then so the whole next year, I did one half in Boise and then just trained up for Ironman Kona.
Okay. Gotcha.
And then going to Kona was just unreal.
What'd you think your first, we talked about that a little bit before, because I wanted to ask you about several things. So we'll just jump into that now. What'd you think your first year you went?
Oh man, back then it was like, it was a brand new world. And then going, I think we got there Tuesday and came into the Parade of Nations and then just seeing like everybody's the fittest person in the world. And then they're like speaking all sorts of foreign languages. So they're from all over. Mm-hmm. And it was just something so unique at like 20 years old, like never seen it, never part of it. And I knew I wanted to go like 9:30.
Okay.
Was kind of where my mindset was, is like, if I can put it all together, I could hit 9:30. Mm-hmm. And so I came out of the swim at like 105, 106, and I was a little behind what I thought I could do, but it's salt water. It's like, just focus on the bike. And going out on the bike is killer, right? It's 100% humidity, exposure, super windy. And
I think that's the one thing that I didn't grasp. Like, you're like, oh, it's like 90 degrees and it's black top. Like, I can kind of relate that in Oklahoma in the summertime. Like, okay, the humidity.
Yeah.
It's just, it's awful. Awful. Like 24 hours a day. Like, you don't get a relief. So you sweat from the time you get off the plane till the time you get back on the plane.
Yeah.
Oh, it's brutal.
I remember we got a hotel without AC.
Yep.
And it was like, the next 2 years we got AC.
Uh-huh. But the place
the first time was like
awful. The place we just stayed in, it has, it was like a garage that they had converted for like an Airbnb, and the living room kitchen area didn't have AC, but our bedroom did.
going in that bedroom was like walking into an ice box. It was so amazing. But man, sitting on the couch, and none of the houses had AC. Like, they all have their windows open the whole entire time. I'm like, how do these people do it? It's freaking awful. It's so bad. Yeah, it's a different kind of misery for sure. So your first experience, how did you end up finishing that? Well, then you get off the bike and the run's brutal.
So getting off the bike and it's just complete, like down a lee is it's like stagnant air. Mm-hmm. So it's all just kind of sits there hot and humid, and like the sweat just gathers up. And I think it was like, I just can't slow down. My pace was 630s or 640s. And I was like, I know I need to slow down. Mm-hmm. I need to slow down. And I just couldn't. So it was like, well, I'm just going to go until I can't.
Uh-huh.
And then climbing up Polani and then going out to the energy lab. I think I remember it was like my parents were like, you're in 10th or something. I was like, okay, just keep chugging. And then going to the energy lab and coming back out. And I think one of the coaches was on the scooter and was like, you're in 6th.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, fuck. Just keep going. And then,
you're like, I wish something happened so I could sweat hurting so much.
And then like Luis pulled up to me, I think like 3 miles left, and he's like, 5th is right there. And I was like, damn. And it was a Timex guy. And I was like, Timex was like the big team that everybody wanted to be on. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I kind of bugged Tristan.
I think they even sponsored a couple pieces of the race.
They were like the bike course. And And so I was like I really wanted on the team, and the manager had a guy in our same age group. And so he was like, he didn't blow me off. Tristan's awesome. But I was definitely like, oh man, I want to hunt this guy down. And I finally passed him. And then like going up, like the last, I think it's mile, my hamstrings just started cramping like a knot. And I was like, no. And then just struggling back in. And I think I hit 9:30, like 30 something.
Oh man.
And it was like spot on. And it was awesome. 4th place, just like, didn't even realize. What a wild
first couple of races you had.
Yeah.
You're like, man, this is easy. Like, this is great.
Oh, it was at no point did I ever think it was easy. But
did you realize what you were actually pulling off? Like, or were you still so young that you're still just like, this is just what's been normal so far.
It definitely wasn't normal, but I was really like happy with the efforts.
Yeah.
It was a ton of effort. It was like,
for sure,
very methodical approaches and sticking into like exactly what the coach wanted. Cause back then it was like 20, 25 hours working out a day. But I was in college, so I could, wake up early. I could do it between classes. I had time to recover.
So you're doing 20, 25 hours a week, like all the time.
All the time. Yeah. God, start training January 1st and doing two a days, and like Wednesdays would be 3 a days. And that I think has helped build up the base and like just the good practice of like knowing when to back it off. And, but now everybody's kind of changed training methods, lactic acid, power. I think that brings up the level another.
And it works so well with your engineering brain to multi-sport is like perfect combination for you.
Well, it's like, I don't want to think about it. And that's why you hire a coach. Right. It's like, I don't have the brain power to like put to that. So as I'd rather have somebody who knows what they're doing, direct me into what to do. So I'm not wasting my time learning and failing and getting injured and then frustrated. So it was, hey, I know at the beginning that I want to do well. So I'm going to invest in a coach and just have them direct me.
So you've always had coaches?
Up until probably like 13, where I started really going more full-time engineering. And then, cause I had the right around that time is, do I want to go professional?
That's what I was going to ask.
Cause
next.
It was like, there were like the three guys, one guy ended up, the guy that won our age group ended up having a heart problem from Austria, but he was an insane biker.
Gotcha.
And then second place, I think his name was like Tim Reed, but he won the 70.3 Ironman World Championships, like the professional.
Okay.
And then Rodrigo was from Colombia, and he's still a professional triathlete, like through South America. So like all of those guys have gone on and stayed professional, but I just saw by the time I'd hit 40, 45, like the body would be destroyed.
Right.
And then you'd have to reinvent yourself at 40. So I figured, okay, stick with the professional career and then enjoy this as a hobby.
Right. So you knew early on that it was just going to be a top age group kind of grind, and then as a fun thing. Yeah. And me and Smoke were actually just talking about this week. I'm like, these guys that are, we're talking about Reed. He was one of them, you know, like he's kind of that level where if he had the ability to put in like just a little bit extra more time, or it started a few years earlier, like in his, say like he was 20 or 18, you know, cause he came to it late. It would be, then you have to make that decision. Like, and we were both talking like it would be better to be, instead of being like a mid pack pro and just grinding so hard to just scrape by, especially nowadays, you can be a top age grouper and get probably better endorsement deals, better like support from companies, and enjoy winning stuff and competing instead of like just grinding to not like lose another spot. And I think it would be so much more enjoyable to be a top age grouper than a mid pack pro.
Yeah, it's interesting that everybody's approach to that. And mm-hmm. for me, it was take the professional route and enjoy it as a hobby, which mm-hmm. is still, I mean, it's easy to say that, but it's still like, hey, I have goals. I want to do, you know, break 9 hours. I want to mm-hmm. hit this pace. And like, then all that stuff kind of goes out the window and you hyper focus on that goal.
Right.
So there's that balance.
Well, and so that was your first year at Kona was in 2009. Is that what you said?
09.
09. So you get back in for 10.
I mean, I think after that point, I had graduated and working full time as an engineer. Okay. So I think I did like a 946 again and a 945. So, I mean, I think it was like top 10 and then I aged up and it was just middle of the pack. It was, again, great experiences. But at that point, I think it really was like the world level competition was way
amazing
past me. Yeah.
How quick that's gone up. Yeah. It's crazy. So you've kind of been in the inside for a long time now, like in racing at a top level. What do you think has changed to make the athletes so much faster?
Yeah, I think the training for sure is what's made everybody faster. The nutrition has changed completely. Like we've done all these trials and errors and now we kind of know what not to do. Mm-hmm. Like the super high threshold workouts all the time. Like you got to back it off. You change up your paces to prevent injury. Mm-hmm. Cycling and power is huge. Mm-hmm. I think like, I really don't enjoy it. And I definitely didn't get into the sport to stay on a indoor trainer, mm-hmm. but that for sure has upped everybody's game. You for see sure. everybody riding indoors right now and mm-hmm. it drives me crazy.
Yeah.
Like I got into it to get outside and go see things and do things. Yeah. And a lot of these guys that are just awesome athletes spend all the time on the trainer.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's what's your goal, uh-huh. right? I would much rather be outside and maybe not as get as good of a workout in, mm-hmm. And still go see things.
But enjoy.
I think I would enjoy that. I know I would enjoy that better than indoor training. There was so kind of to this is I got heat stroke really bad at Redman in 16, mm-hmm. and then so I decided to do indoor training for pretty much all of 17. Mm. And I remember doing like the indoor type trainers. It wasn't on Zwift or anything, right. but it was like, hey, these are the power ranges I'm going to hit. And it's 4 hour workout, 5 hour workout. You do these intervals at these times. And like, I ended up having I won Ironman Maryland in 17.
Okay. Cause I was going to bring that up. I knew you won an Ironman, but I didn't know when it was.
And that bike was like 436 or something. Gosh. So it went from like a 5 hour average to like dropping down.
It was there.
Significant. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that just consistency, focusing on power, the types of workouts, but like, and hitting your zones, mm-hmm. For sure. There's a lot to that.
Big drop in time. Yeah. That's wild.
Yeah. But then going outside and cycling here, like obviously we have hills, mm-hmm. up and down hills. Like my normal route is down to Jones, Luther, and then back into Edmond. Mm-hmm. So that's like a 40-mile plus loop of 2,500 foot of climbing. Like you're not doing 250 watts mm-hmm. perfect. Mm-hmm. But now I can climb hills pretty well. So like, but.
Well, okay, let's go back to Maryland because we're going to jump all over the place and I don't care. That's totally fine. So when you did Ironman Maryland, this is 7 years now into, 8 years into being an adult of having a big kid job.
Yeah.
And not getting just to do what train and what, how, and wherever you wanted to. What was like, was it that year of just more focused indoor training and just like laying it out there that kind of helped you step up that game? Or was it just like one of those magical days and it just worked out?
I think I was doing sales back then. So mm-hmm. I think I had a more open schedule so I could work out like kind of in the middle of the day. Mm-hmm. And I dropped from two workouts a day to just one. Okay. And so it was really put a focus on nailing that one workout a day.
Mm-hmm. How many hours a week were you training during that time?
10 to 12.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. Not much. It was an hour a day and maybe four or five on the weekends.
Wow. Okay.
But it was like on the bike, so I'm going to hit these power numbers and these intervals or this tempo.
It was very structured.
Yeah. It was very structured.
But you'd also at this point got 10 years of miles in you.
Yeah.
And training in you.
And that's huge. Like huge. I can't understate like, hey, had a huge base. Like you probably can't do that off. I mean, 10 to 12 hours of like just off the couch.
Right.
Right. So yeah. It does take quite a few years to build up an endurance base.
For sure. Yeah. What was it like that day? Were you in the front from the beginning or?
Oh, no. It was like a bay swim. And I remember there was some sting, like jellyfish and getting stung and like coming out. And I think it was like 103 on the watch or 10, like, and I was like, man, I really was thinking I'd get a whole lot better swim. And then it was like, okay, I need to make up a little time on the bike. So I went a little bit harder early on. And then I saw like a group of skinnier athletes that were cruising along pretty good, like a pack of five or six. Uh-huh. And I was like, okay, I can cruise along with these guys, or I can like make a surge and really try to put an effort in. Cause my goal was to break 9 hours. Okay. And so it's one, do you want to kind of sit in a group and ride at a controlled pace or like try to push it and go on your own? So I pushed past them maybe like 30 miles in. And then after that point, I didn't see anybody else. And it was just like, put the head down and keep grinding, I think. And then watch the power.
Mm-hmm.
And then like 100 miles in, all of a sudden, like this lead car comes up and goes, you're in first, and they've got the time up top. And I'm like, holy shit. You're
like, how did this happen?
You're like mind blown. And pulling into transition, like nobody's there. And they're like, oh, this is DJ Sire's first blah, blah, blah.
That's
and
I was
like,
wild.
Wow.
Like and super cool. And like, oh man.
Yeah. And then I just remember I got off my bike, you hand it off to a person, you go and grab your other bag. And then like you sit down in the transition in the chair. And I was like, oh shit, just breathe. And then just take a couple deep breaths, put my socks and shoes on and then went off.
How
and
far of a lead did you have going into the run?
I think I had like 12 minutes.
Oh, wow. You'd put it into those guys.
But it was like three out and backs.
Oh, so
and
you're
so
going to see
like,
each other.
I was out and then I looked at the watch and I think it was like 12 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then coming back the other way, you see it's like down to six.
Oh, man.
And it's like a pack of runners and it's like a pack of 10 and then it's a pack of six.
Oh.
And then it's just out and back and out and back. And then
that's like great and bad.
10 miles, somebody was within 30 seconds of me.
Shut
and I just
up.
Like... Just don't let him pass. Don't let him pass. And then, well, it was all about time. It's like, okay, I'm on pace. Everything is good. Feet are killing. Just keep getting drinks in. And it was like a Red Bull and water at every aid station, which is like.
Oh, my gosh. Your stomach must have been a wreck.
Oh, it was horrible. And then it was like 2 miles left. And I was like, if this guy really wants it, I'm going to make him work for it.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's like grab the Red Bull, drink it, and then you know you immediately want to put in more effort, and then everything just cramps up.
Yeah,
he must have been hurting a lot more than me because held him off. And
how much? So did you win by like 30 seconds?
It was like 2 minutes.
Okay, so but, he was feeling it too.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, what a cool feeling!
It was insane.
But you didn't go back to Kona that year?
No,
you just didn't want to go anymore.
Well, I finished, and then.
Because first all overall leaders is and stuff, wild.
Like a guy, I mean, he came up to me and he's like, hey, I was in a car accident last year and it was like my goal to go to Kona and like, you know, and he did really well. I think he was third overall and his family was there. And I was like, he's like, are you going to take the Kona spot? And I was like, yeah, I was going to take it because obviously like my mom loves to go to Hawaii.
Right,
so.
right.
But then he was like, you know. His kids are there.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, yeah, man, take it. Have fun.
Okay. So he got to go.
Yeah.
Well, that's definitely your good deed in the multi-sport world to pass that up. Cause that's clearly not a once in a lifetime opportunity for you, but like, you don't know if you're ever going to get to go back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, have you qualified since or tried?
17. That was my last Ironman.
That was your last full. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you feel like you had a natural, cause people kind of fall into like, the distance that like naturally suits them. Did you feel that the full suited you pretty well, like naturally? Or was it just something you enjoyed doing and that was just kind of what you did?
I think it's a big buildup and it's the execution. So I think it's like you have your mindset and a goal and it's you have to be able to be there on that day. And mm-hmm. somehow I've just been able to
you
do
like
that.
Yeah. You like that piece of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then during that 7 year, 8 year period, were you doing other distances or were you really just focused on the fulls?
Yeah, for sure. I was still doing halves and then playing with Olympics. I've raced a few sprints and then still dinked around with like adventure racing. Mm-hmm. And
because I knew you had done a couple of adventure races, but I want to talk about that in a second. But because they look so fun.
I mean, it really is just like getting out and experiencing new mm-hmm. events. Because mm-hmm. it really wasn't like, I just want to go be a really good athlete. Right. It's like, I want to go places and see things.
Right.
And the way I could do that is by racing well.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, okay. So let's get into adventure racing. I'll ask you something else that we talked about just really briefly. But so the adventure races, how many of those have you done?
I don't even know.
Like
a couple dozen.
Oh, okay.
A dozen, so quite a few. Two dozen.
So, I mean, because adventure races can mean anything.
Yeah.
And they could be any distance.
Yeah.
What's like your normal one and what's like the craziest? Let's start with the normal. What's like a normal one that you would do?
I enjoy the 2-3 hour, they're like sprint adventure races. Mm-hmm. So like the course is actually kind of marked. It's typically like mountain biking, some type of trail running, and then canoe paddling.
Okay.
And then they usually have some mystery events like puzzles or things like that. So kind of goofy. Like
some cognitive stuff. Yeah. 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 I've seen it where they like make you memorize numbers and you have to like undo them later and
stacking foam blocks, like doing puzzles.
Interesting.
I mean,
where did you go to do these at?
Texas. Oh. So when I was an intern in Texas and there were a couple other Montana Tech guys down there and one friend was kind of getting into adventure racing because there was a bigger group down there in 2005, 2006, 2007, you know. And so there was this Texas adventure racing series, Terra Firma, put on races throughout Texas and they had 5 or 6 and it was like cumulative points to a Texas state champ title.
Cool.
And so
do they still do this?
They're down to 1 race. Okay. I really wish they'd come back with
more. Yeah.
But it was a ton of fun. They were outside of Austin, Dallas and Grapevine. They even did one in downtown Houston. I didn't get to catch that one, but it was like a city adventure racing.
That would be so fun.
Yeah.
Man, that would be awesome if they still had that stuff.
Yeah. I wish they did. Yeah. Like, I know it's a lot of effort, but,
cool.
Yeah. The longest one we ever did was 24 hours.
Okay. Where was that?
Oh my gosh. I think it's Camp Eagle.
Okay.
It's like west of Austin.
So everything you did was pretty much Texas.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. 24 hours. Oof.
So that you actually, they give you GPS coordinates and they give you a map. Okay. And then you have to go plot those coordinates and then you find basically either stamps or a book and you pull your mm-hmm. team bib number out of that book.
Were teams of 2 or 4?
So this was a team of 4.
Okay.
The sprints were typically teams of 2 or a solo.
Okay. Gotcha. Did you know how to do the
No. That I was just navigating just along for the ride then. I mean that was way more involved. We were doing rappelling, we were doing multi-mile kayaks. It was all at night and
super fun, but man, you better know what the hell's somebody's gotta know what's going on.
Yeah.
Or somebody's gonna get really hurt. Wow. So you were just like, I'm here to be the athlete.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I remember at 2 a.m. there's just a bunch of mesquite trees out and the spiders are out and they've all got their webs. And then they'd put these checkpoints at the base of trees. And so it's like, okay, it's like, we're plotting the map. It's 800 meters down this ridge. And so we're walking, trying to count our steps, but I'm leading. And every time I go through a web and I'm like, shit. There's a spider in that. Uh-huh. There's a spider in that.
Uh-huh. Just eating them nonstop.
Yeah. That's all I could think of that whole night.
They're like, listen, man, you can't do anything. So you get up front and break spider webs.
Yeah.
Everybody's got their job.
After that, it is exhausting. But I mean, again, totally different world. Mm-hmm. I would love to do the Eco Challenge.
Oh,
have you seen that?
Yeah. That thing's nasty.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is like next level intense.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's super really cool.
Yeah.
There's some of those races that I like watching. I'm like, they'll do little documentaries or just like race things and you watch and you're just like, I don't remember which one I watched. I don't remember what race it was, but it was, they had to basically they were going across, a river, but then they had to get up and go around because it would be like blocked off or whatever, but they'd have to pull their kayak out of the water and hike it straight up a muddy, slippery mountain to get around whatever was the obstacle. But they may spend 4 hours going 150 yards trying to drag the kayak straight up a mountain with in mud in a thick, dense forest. And I'm just like, I would lose my mind. Like,
yeah.
The amount of mental fortitude that those people have and the amount of suffer that they can go through is incredible.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Four straight days with maybe like 3 hours of sleep and still be able to coordinate and, and do physical activity. Like,
and it's not like riding a mountain bike at Draper. It's like, like the nastiest, hardest, and hike a bikes everywhere. And
yeah.
Oh, it, I think the idea of it sounds cool. I think the execution of being inside of it would, I don't know if it would be real cool.
That's why I enjoyed those sprints. It's like you're there.
You get a taste of it.
You get a taste of it.
I did one like that. They had it, and I don't know if they still have it. It was in Muskogee, and it was called Port to Port, I think is what it was. So you started off, and they were like, you have a swim, all this stuff. The swim was like, you could almost jump over the water. I mean, it was like 30 yards, maybe. Basically, they just wanted to get you wet. And then you had a trail run. It's like a 5 mile trail run. Then you had like a, I was like a 10 mile trail, a mountain bike. And then you had a 2 mile kayak back and you kayaked on the Arkansas River. I have never been in a kayak and I went down here and rented one at the boathouse like the week before because I'm like, well, I got to get in here to like understand what's going on, try to figure out like an efficient way. So I'm watching YouTube videos, like what's an efficient way to paddle. And clearly I was not efficient. I was just like surviving, but I took a really good wreck on the mountain bike, separated my AC and like sprained it. And I was like, I don't know. And I was wearing a tank top. So I was just, and it was on a gravel road. I was eaten up and I'm like, this kayak is going to be miserable. And I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't know how to read water or anything. So I just try to stay over by the shore because I feel like that would be less current or be easier. But then you get to a spot where two rivers meet. And then there's boats going down and like the swell and waves were like, I don't know, for a kayaker that knows what's going on, they would be like, just go through it, like whatever. But I'm like, if I tip out of this, I don't know how to get back into it. I was so scared. It was one of the most fun events I've ever done in my life. But man, it was so scary because I'm just not proficient on the water. But I would love to do more of those. So fun. But I didn't realize I had them in Texas.
Yeah. I'll shoot you the links.
Okay. Yeah, I'm in. That would be awesome. Well, let's talk about teams because you had mentioned the Timex team and you've been on several over your career. Did you get on the Timex team with that?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
The next year I poked Tristan right after that. Okay. I got accepted.
Me and a couple of buddies joke about this all the time now. Cause now like everybody's on a team and it's basically like pay us money and you're on our team and we give you a 10% discount. So I have my own thoughts and humor about that, but there has been legit teams and Timex was one of them.
Back then it was quite a bit different.
Yeah.
It was like, it was a team and it was fully supported. I mean,
how did it work? Like, what did it look like from the inside?
So Timex had, and I'm sure I'm screwing this back end up,
but, right.
They had hired a management consulting company to come in and manage the actual athletes.
Okay.
So it wasn't just Timex sponsoring the team. It was like, it ended up being Quintana Roo or Cervelo, Shimano. I mean, we had a ton of great sponsors throughout the years and they would provide products and support at races and for the professional athletes bikes and then like mechanic support. They would actually travel around and support all the, I think it was like 7 major US Ironman races.
So you being the age grouper, you would go there and there would be mechanics that you guys could use.
They would have a big semi there and you'd drop your bike off and they'd take care of it. But
wow.
You know, every year in like February or March, they'd fly us out and we'd go to New York or Tucson and we'd do a team camp. Mm-hmm. You'd learn about the products and the sponsors and like what makes them unique and what are their goals as a company. And so it was really cool to see that.
I mean, because you're a true ambassador for those brands.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of what sponsorship should be.
Is, right.
You know, you're representing a company. Mm-hmm. Why do you have them on your kit? Do you like them?
Right.
Do you even know who they are?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a big thing. It's like, hey, if they're committed to you, you need to put a little effort in and understand who they are.
Right.
And they did a really good job at that.
That's cool.
We did, I mean, it was training courses. We used to do like VO2 max and lactic acid tests. So they'd bring in like KU or a university to come in and study and do a test. And then we'd get that results back. Body fat tests, like
VO2 max. I mean, you're basically like a professional.
Yeah. And so this was probably the coolest thing about it is we were at the New York Giants training facility.
Oh, gosh.
This Timex was a sponsor of the New York Giants. So like we had free range of their entire training facilities. It was like they had just the cafeteria with professional chefs.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And then we'd have parties at the stadium.
What the heck?
So it was like, how many athletes were there? There were 50 athletes 50. From all over the world. Okay. And then, it was initially, it was focused on triathlon, and then kind of later years, they ended up bringing in trail running. Mm-hmm. And then Timex, I think, I mean, technology's boomed. So right. I think they wanted to focus on more like the leisure and fashion type watches. Mm-hmm. And then Suunto came in and picked up the team.
Gotcha. Cause you were on that. You were on that team for a long time.
It was then. The same management team, and they ended up transitioning. Basically Suunto came in as a title sponsor.
Gotcha.
And then they put the emphasis more on trail running and not necessarily just on Ironman triathlon. Mm-hmm. And so they mixed it up 25 and I think 25. So gotcha. More trail racing, very heavy trail racing. So then the team camps were out in St. George, and it was very cool to see like ultra marathoners, right, doing Mont Blanc and all of what the races that they do. They brought in a bunch of Xterra, like mm-hmm. Josiah.
Yeah, because your Carson. Pictures and stuff from those camps are just – ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, just over the, like the coolest stuff that I think in this sport is like,
you have to be like legit in shape to go to camp.
Yeah.
Cause you're showing up with the baddest people around.
Like
you can't go lay an egg at camp. Be like rolling in, like right off the couch for the last 2 months.
Yeah.
Cause I'm sure it's a contest.
I mean, we're running in the middle of like New Jersey in the winter, like freezing with,
man. So how long were you on that team?
10 to 14, and then, I don't know, 17, 18, 19.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do they provide you product or deeply discounted product? And then did the events, like stuff change over time? Or whenever you showed up to one of their big Ironman races, like you still had like this valet service of,
I mean, they were there to support us. Mm-hmm. Like they didn't try to force people to do certain things.
So you didn't have to certain races you had to require to do.
You didn't need
that
to
stuff.
Do five races. You didn't need to
just like, do what you wanted.
Yeah. Do what mm-hmm. you wanted. And they would be there to support you. If you want to do a clinic in Oklahoma City, they'd send you some hats and go do that.
That's cool.
Like it was really like what I would think teams should be.
Right.
Huh. And then I will say they have kind of changed a little bit.
Right. Things have kind of cut back. And
yeah.
Now they go the influencer route and things like that. And yeah. But you guys weren't, well, I guess first started that stuff didn't really exist. And so
yeah.
Did that, was that a requirement as those last like 17, 18, 19? Was there more requirements with that stuff?
I think that's when I got an Instagram account was like 17. They're like, I didn't get it up until then.
They're like, you need this.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. And then now going forward, you have a new chapter with your team stuff. So what do you got working now?
So Suunto kind of took, I think they really wanted to focus on the marketing, the influencer mm-hmm. type. So they focused on just a handful of athletes instead of sponsoring 50. They focused it down really just to like the ultra runners and really like the top tier ultra runners.
Gotcha.
So then we kind of sat with COVID, like the sponsorship was all kind of in question. And mm-hmm. so Slow Twitch kind of took lead on bringing together, keeping somewhat of a team.
Gotcha.
So like a handful of individuals kind of stayed with the group. A couple kind of went off.
Did like the management group kind of stay involved, or how did you guys stay connected?
Management kind of, they went off and got professional careers.
Gotcha.
And then, so Eric Wynn from Slow Twitch Media House kind of took charge on creating a new team.
Gotcha.
And then, so that's kind of been brewing the last couple of years. So you see, like I've been racing mm-hmm. with a Slow Twitch kid. There's a handful of us or more than a handful. And Eric's kind of built up the sponsorship over that. So like Certified Piedmontese and Good Life Brands like mm-hmm. became a title sponsor. And I think just recently in Kona, they had launched the team kind of as broader. So gotcha. I don't know what it'll look like as far as like next year, but mm-hmm. I really like, I have high hopes that it'll be bring back more grassroots and really focus on good quality sponsors and why are you working with these individuals in these groups. And,
interesting. It's kind of cool to be a part of something starting out.
It is neat. And
especially
it's neat
with Slow Twitch. They're such a staple in the multi-sport community.
Been around forever.
Forever.
And then I think the focus is not just on triathlon. It's, hey, gravel is taking off. Like mm-hmm. let's research gravel and give good articles on gravel and good insight on gravel. Where is that going? Yeah. And then Well, shoot, gravel triathlon. Did my first gravel triathlon this summer.
It was where awesome. Was it at?
It was in Nebraska. So certified Piedmontese. Yep. Their team put it on. So they're out of Lincoln, Nebraska. They've got a bunch of ranches around Nebraska, and then basically they're big supporters. They split between gravel and triathlon. There's a lot of cycling influence in like the Good Life Racing. So they had a team and now merging together with Slow Twitch. So
interesting.
Taking the gravel and then
is that where you? Because what bike did I see you got a sponsorship with? What bike is that? Cervelo. With Cervelo. Is that the gravel bike that you were doing pictures for?
That was Ventum.
Ventum. Because I remember you had pictures that you were doing in gravel, and I was like, I didn't even know you rode gravel.
Well, again, the neat thing about hanging out with the guys is like, so Slow Twitch is involved with a handful of bikes, and they have to shoot them, and like we get to play with them.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I
said, hey, DJ, I'm going to be in Oklahoma. Do you want to ride this Ventum? I was like, hell yeah.
Sure.
Or, hey, we've got these looks that just sent in. We've got to take some pictures and tear them down. And it's like, well, shit, I'll go ride
it. Send it over. Yeah.
And then, going up to Nebraska, borrowed a Cervelo Aspero.
I love those bikes. Man. I love them. I love everything Cervelo's ever done. And then, so MI3T was designed by them as, or essentially by Cervelo. Cervelo's always been my favorite bike.
Yeah.
So, and I saw the other day in one of the mountain bike races, they got a mountain bike now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was this year. It just came out.
When we, raced, Beaver Creek in Colorado, Eric had brought out
this. Are they even in production yet?
No,
I didn't think so.
No. It's cool to like see like all this stuff that hasn't even come out. The KDEX stuff is
that stuff is sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm super excited to see a Cervelo bike in person. Cause I've just seen them on the UCI races. So on the mountain bike side. They're pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty slick.
They are pretty slick. Yeah. So how'd you do with the gravel?
Second overall.
Okay.
It was a ton of fun.
Yeah.
Simon, what was the distance on that? So it was a little more random. It was like a 1100 meter swim, 30 something mile gravel, and then a 10K run.
Oh,
so it was just kind of,
kind of whatever the course allowed,
which is fun. I mean, I think we've in the last like 10 years, hyper-focused on just times. It's like, hey, this is it's an Olympic distance. I want to hit 2:30 or two hours. And same thing with the 70.3 and the Ironman. It's like, we're just going to make the courses flatter and then loop them. And then everybody can get a really good time. Yep. Whereas like, hey, this is kind of a challenge, maybe not focus on time and focus on like the effort adventure. Or the place or,
yeah
and so that was a lot of fun because then it's not like your training goes out like, and that's something with Xterra is they kind of give you a general idea. It's like it's always typically about 1500 meter swim and then anywhere from like 15 to 20 mile bike. Well, that's a pretty big range.
It's a
and
big
then
difference.
Up a mountain or like hills and then the run is typically like around that 6 mile mark,
right? Yeah, they did the USA Nationals the last 2 years was in Bentonville, Fayetteville area, and they had a gravel try there the last 2 years. And I was planned on doing it this year, but I wanted to do the off-road duathlon or the off-road try. And I was like, I started swimming again. I was like, I'm so over this. So I'm just going to do
remember, I don't like that.
Yeah, I was like, so I'm just going to do the duathlon piece of this. But I wanted the off-road is what I cared about the most. So I was hoping, because they were back-to-back days. So if they did the off-road the day before, then I would have done both. But I was like, I really want to do well on the off-road. And the gravel would have just been for fun. And they had the gravel the first day, so I didn't do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would love to go out and do one of those. Because, I mean, it's just fun. It's just so much. It's just, I'm hoping that the gravel personality kind of penetrates the multi-sport personality a little bit. Cause that was the reason that I got out of the tri world, the multi-sport worlds. Cause I couldn't take it the so uber type A. The only thing that matters is this heart rate and my macros and my numbers. And I have to wear all my compressions and I got to chest out while I'm walking around. Like I'm like, man, we're all just age groupers, man. Like just cause you're faster, you just calm down.
And like, think about when I came into the sport, like that's what I really liked is like, everybody was a small little community and it was new to everybody. And so like you see that in different sports and gravel for sure right now. Mm-hmm. Xterra is still that way.
For sure. You can
still have 700-800 people at a race, but it's a lot more relaxed. Like the race I think starts at like 9 o'clock in the morning. Like yeah. I would love an Ironman to start at 9 o'clock
and people camp in the morning. And hang out, have their dogs.
Yeah.
It's the mountain bike vibe with a multi-sport race in the middle.
Yeah.
I love Xterra stuff. We did it for a couple of years and I love them as probably my most favorite sport I've done in endurance, but I just got tired of driving because nothing is around here.
Yeah.
Like, and that sucks. And then you go down to Texas and it's the same courses every year. And those local guys it's tough to hang with them.
Yeah.
When they race the same trails every year and you have no clue what's coming around this corner.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah. And if you're an Xterra, again, since I suck and hate swimming, it's so swim heavy as far as like where you come out and having a clean trail. So if I would come out mid pack, it was a nightmare on the mountain bike.
That is a big part of it too.
Huge part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you can be a great swimmer and an okay mountain biker and survive to get to the run. You can't be an okay swimmer and be a good mountain biker. You'll never get to the front of the pack ever.
It is hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially on those tight single tracks where you can't get through people. Yeah. Yeah. But so that was kind of where I'm like, man, if I want to be good at this, I'm really going to spend more time swimming. And I was like, I have to drive and swim more. This isn't a good combination for me.
Yeah.
But I love them. They're so fun. When did you get into the Xterra side a little bit heavier? Because you did quite a few of them recently.
Yeah. I think Kelsey and I had raced Xterra Waco in, was it 2020 or 2021?
Okay.
And then I did Beaver Creek. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the lead into it is like, well, okay, I can survive.
The Try It Thunderbird.
Oh, then the Try It Thunderbird was right that around same that same frame. 2020.
Yeah. Yeah, around that time
frame. And it was like, my mountain biking was not great. Like, you know, again, it's more technique than it is just laying out power. And it's a lot of like sprinting to get up to speed and then trying to coast through curves instead of like speed, hard brake, turn. So like there's a lot more technique to it. Yeah. That takes time.
For sure takes time.
Yeah.
Yeah, just learning.
And they were a ton of fun and I wasn't super great at it. Like I could run and I could swim, but the mountain biking is a huge part.
Yeah,
like you could burn yourself out and not have a good run if you try to bike too hard.
For sure.
And so like those were good races to just get completely destroyed on.
And it's good whenever you've kind of been at the top of something and then you go do something and you're like, oh, well, it's another triathlon, but it's not.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh man, I got so much to learn. And you get to like start the process over.
Yeah.
That's what I loved when I jumped into mountain biking is coming from multi-sport of like, well, for me to get to that next level, like I'm never going to be like top level, but for me to go, I know how much more work I'm going to have to put in. I'm like, I just don't really want to put in that many more hours to go up like a couple of minutes. Like it's not worth it. But then when I started the mountain bike, I'm like, I suck so bad and have so much to learn. And so every time I went out, it was fun because I felt like I either got better or I learned something or I'm like, could experiment with something. And when you're just doing the same thing all the time, you're kind of just like stuck in that loop.
Yeah. It's fun to learn some new skills.
Yeah. New techniques, new terminology, new bikes, new everything. I mean,
everything. It has nothing to do with getting a new bike.
No, never. No, No, that's not fun at all.
Yeah.
So are you riding a lot of mountain bike now?
Yeah. Kelsey and I like to go ride Arcadia quite a bit. Again, the working out's gone significantly down with the new business, but I still enjoy it. Yeah,
right.
For sure.
And she's racing a lot nowadays.
Yeah.
She's podiuming them all over the place.
I can't get her to swim, but she can bike and run. She
likes
to
do athlon stuff.
Okay. Yeah. She's got her first half marathon in Tulsa.
Okay.
At the Tulsa one in 2 weeks.
Gotcha. Has she always been, and for people that don't know, Kelsey's your wife.
Kelsey's
and you guys been married for?
3 years.
Okay.
But together for maybe 13 or 14.
Oh, man. Maybe we need to talk to her to get a piece of this episode. Maybe not. So has she always been into endurance sports or is this a new thing for her?
She's getting more into it. Okay. She was into weightlifting more.
Gotcha.
And then now we've traveled around. She used to
do competitions?
Yeah.
Okay.
She used to do some bodybuilding competitions.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. So she has that driven personality as well.
Yeah. And then we got a mountain bike for her. Well, we mountain biked a little bit in Texas, I think. And then moving up here, we got her a little bit nicer mountain bike. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we went on a few trips.
I was going to say, you guys take really great vacations.
Yeah. Kind of grew and grew and grew. And then I finally got her to do it.
Yeah.
But well, it's been fun. I mean, she did that gravel try. She did the gravel duathlon.
Oh, she did?
Yeah. Okay.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. That was a fun course. Beautiful area.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was
nice,
really nice.
Yeah. Nice rolling hills. It was like a lot of rolling hills like here, but the gravel is more like actual gravel and not clay.
Yeah. Yeah, so. You had gravel, not just hard pack, fast dirt roads.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I saw she did well at, is it Alabama? The Xterra in Alabama? Is that where it's at?
Navasota.
That was in Navasota. I thought that was Navasota. What was the one that's in the big, is it Nationals or the regional one in Alabama? Did you go out there this year? I guess not. Maybe I'm just misremembering that.
Maybe
I'm misremembering that. So the Navasota, that's the one down in South Texas, right?
Yeah, South College Station.
Yeah.
I know we did that one.
Okay. And then, yeah, she's been cleaning up the podiums. Every time I see you guys go into a race, there's always podium picks.
I know. People are giving me shit if I don't win, and she wins.
Yeah, well, you've created a monster.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of her, because this is something I was going to lead off with, but since we're here now, let's talk about the amazing amount of animals that you have at your house.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's like my...
We've got a zoo.
You and I love every second of it. I love that she's always posting great pictures and you're posting them as well. What all animals do you guys have?
Yeah, we've had chickens and turkeys and peacocks and guineas. We've got dogs and cats. We've had horses and goats and pigs. We've got a few acres and... We've got... Yeah.
It's
they're
wild.
A lot of fun.
So at one time, how many animals have you had?
I think it was like 47.
Where do all these come from?
Kelsey worked at an equine hospital.
Okay.
So like it's unfortunate what some people do to animals.
Right. And so you guys would just take them in.
We would just take them in.
Oh yeah. My gosh. Yeah. Because every time you guys post them, I'm like, where the hell did they get these from? It was always something new.
They're always fun. Yeah. Pets are great.
What do you do with them? Just rehab them up and... Like foster them, or do you guys keep all of them? Oh my gosh!
Give them a good home. Yeah.
Golly, how many acres do you have to keep all these animals?
Three.
It's got to be full.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sounds like you need more acres.
Yeah. One day.
What do you do whenever you guys leave to go to trips? Who takes care of all this?
We always have to ship a parent in.
Okay.
Yeah, we ship either her parents in or my parents in, and they watch the place.
Oh my gosh! So much work every day.
Yeah. Yeah. Or we got the RV and now we take them with us.
You take all the, how many dogs and cats?
We just take three dogs and three cats.
They go in the RV with you?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Not the cats, but the dogs.
The dogs do. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And of course the dogs like sleep on the beds and stuff.
Well, so of course. That's pretty exactly tight. How it should be. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I know. I love the pictures that you guys post. It's like my favorite thing. Man. Okay. Well, that's good stuff. Then there's a couple other things that I want to get into, but one of the things we talked about beforehand, I was like, what are some like cool races or events you've gone to? And you mentioned, the Norseman. And the only reason I know anything about this, for one, I watched a documentary on it and it's wild. And then a buddy of mine wants to go and I would have to go crew him. But tell for people that don't have a clue, cause all the cyclists that live to this are like, they've probably already tuned out cause we talked about Kona, but if they're still here, let's talk about Norseman. Cause they think their little gravel races and stuff are hard. Let's talk about what a really hard event is.
Yeah. This is like Norseman is a full Ironman distance in the northwest of Norway. So it's like down in the valley in the fjords. So like glacial cut mountains, like 5,000 foot immediate cliffs above them. And it's, I think it's the end of July every year. And so the water is still freezing. There's still snow up in the mountains and it all runs down into these fjords and it's just glacial water and it's 50 degrees, maybe in the 40s. Yeah. And so it's a 2.5 mile swim. They take you out on a barge in the middle of the, I don't know, fjord. And then you have to swim back and it starts super early in the morning.
It starts basically at dark.
And I was lucky enough to be able to go out on the barge.
Oh, really?
And
oh,
that's cool. See him jump off, take some videos of that. And so I paced Tim Hola, who's part of the Slow Twitch team. And then Eric was over there documenting it for Slow Twitch. Gotcha. And then, so we crewed Tim Hola for the entire
thing. Because that's the thing. So it's, you have to bring a crew with you.
Yes. Yep. So there are no aid stations. It's all self-supported. I think, what is it, like 150, 200 people? Like, yeah, it's not very many people.
I think it's around 200, yeah.
And so it's a small little town, Eyfjord. I don't even know if there's a couple hundred people there, a few hundred people.
You're out in the middle of
nowhere. Yeah. And then so you get done with this swim and your crew helps you take off like your wetsuit and stuff because you're absolutely frozen. Like I swam in the lake with a wetsuit for like 15 minutes and I couldn't talk. Like you are absolutely frozen.
Because I would think that there's got to be a significant percentage of people that don't finish based on the swim only.
The neat thing about this race is everybody is so focused on it being so extreme that like I think the finish rate for that is actually pretty high.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because it's I don't know what the stats are. There are for sure time cutoffs.
Okay, gotcha.
And there's a time cutoff where you can go to the top of the mountain versus going straight to the they make you do loops.
Okay, gotcha. Interesting. So you still get the distance, you just don't get the official finish line.
The black shirt.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, I know what you're talking about. Yep. Okay.
So you get out of the swim, you help get dressed in all your clothes, and this was in 2022, and it's sleeting. You know, you put them in leg warmers, arm warmers, jackets, gloves, and you're putting all this stuff on them because they can barely move, and then you say, okay, pat them on the butt, good luck. And then you kind of follow them, but you can't really follow them, so you have to get ahead of them. Mm. But it's a straight 4,000 or 5,000 foot climb, like
out
first 20 miles.
Oh my gosh.
And then
gosh.
You get up on the ridge and it's just complete exposure. And it's just like, you go from so many different like
ecosystems essentially.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And to just like wind blown, snowy, like the pictures you see of the race are extreme. And then you're going, and then you get into ski towns. So basically you're just going up and down mountain passes. So you've got big pine trees. And so I forget 10 or 15,000 foot of climbing over 112 miles.
Yeah. I want to say it was like around 12 or 15,000. Like it was ridiculous.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some huge climbs, really long climbs.
My gosh.
And then just really cool scenery.
Mm.
And then you get to transition down in this small little town and you run along the lake and along a valley. And then from that, it's maybe not quite halfway. You can have a pacer run with you and you go basically just straight up to the top of the mountain. And it's like European switchback. So it's not even like, oh, we're going to control the grade at like maybe 5 or 6%. It's like 15%, 20%.
And it's an exposed rock. Like it's not like a pretty Colorado trail. It's nasty.
Scree, it's big rocks, and it's
wind at the humming.
Very end of the Ironman.
Yeah.
So the very last 13 miles is just straight up the mountain.
Oh my gosh. I don't remember what the run elevation was, but I just remember watching it, and you can't, like, there's most of it once you hit the mountain part that you're not really running. It's just
Walking. You have to try to like
survive.
Yeah.
How long did it take him?
I think it was a little over 12 hours.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, Tim's a beast.
That's ridiculously fast.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Okay. Well,
that was definitely a neat race.
Do you want to try that?
I don't know. Maybe a long time.
What are you focused on now before we kind of get into wrapping this up? What are you kind of like right now? Is this the Xterra? Is that what you're kind of want to focus on?
Just having fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you don't
Xterra's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Raced the world championships this year in Mulvino.
Mm.
So that was
so it's not in Maui all the time anymore?
They changed that. So I guess Xterra is very big in Europe. And so they changed the world championship from Maui to Italy.
So it's always in Italy now?
I don't know if it's always in Italy, but
it was
last year, this year, and next year it's in Mulvino, which is like 2 hours north of Verona. So like central north.
Mm.
So you're in the Dolomites. So again, it's that super steep mountains,
beautiful,
glacial lakes. And
How'd you do?
Oh, man. I think I was like 100th overall, first American amateur. So,
had a good race.
I guess there's no other American there.
It doesn't matter. Just stick with the first part.
Still take that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But God, it was just so cool. Like it's like European switchbacks in a manual car and like people are passing you going up those hills and, you get up to the top and there's a ski resort and then you drop down and you come into this 1,000-person town and a 50-acre park that's just got like Red Bull written all over it. You got, platform drops,
these
bridges and like Xterra just did like an urban course. And then so like the 2 days leading up to the race, it was all raining, so couldn't practice. it was a lake swim. So like you go out, do a triangle, come back, and then you have to run along the beach and then run out a pier and then jump off the pier and do another triangle. So again, just like little tweaks to our normal races, like make it quite a bit more fun.
Yeah. I do love how Xterra almost always has lap swim. You have to come out on the beach and run or do something. Yeah. That's awesome.
It's horrible. You know, all your blood goes from your arms to your legs to your stomach, and then you want to throw up. And
then you run faster than you should. Now you've spiked your heart rate more than you should have. Yeah. Wow. So what was the bike course? Was it really technical?
Oh man, the bike course. Yeah. You come out, you kind of go over some wooden berms, and then you go bike around the lake, and then it's basically straight up the mountain, like 15-20% grades. Oh my gosh. It had been raining, so it was just cake. And so you hike a bike a little bit and ride. And then all of a sudden you get up to the ski town, you turn around this lake, and then you just go straight down some single track. And they set up berms and jumps and then
super fun
rooty rocks. And like, that's one of those, like, if you can scope out the course and more technical competent on a mountain bike, like that's where it pays off.
Huge difference.
And then you kind of do a rocky section, and then you come down into the road that you'd come into town. And then that's where Red Bull actually closed the town. They put up barriers. You go through like in between buildings, you're dropping down stairs, you're going on brick roads, like just so unique.
So fun.
And then you come back through the park, and then you're doing wood drops. Oh, and my gosh. This is part of the race. And then you have to do two laps of that.
Two laps?
10 miles per lap. Dude. And then,
so fun though.
It was a ton of fun.
It was like playing.
Yeah.
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 Man, that's awesome. How bad was the run?
And then the run was like, you kind of run, I think it's east of town along the lake. And then all of a sudden you jet off and you're side hilling and it's super steep and muddy. And then like, you actually have to use a rope to climb up a good 100 meter section.
Oh my gosh. Like,
it's extreme.
That was
extreme. And it was all muddy and
Did you
and
like,
then you do two laps.
Did you like, of course, did you like being muddy and nasty or?
Oh yeah.
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 Cause it's really just playing.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, that's awesome. I think that's a good race story to end with, but we always like to end every race or every episode with a section called yard sale. And now that you're in the trails, you understand what yard sailing is all about. The first question that we ask every person is your favorite piece of equipment under $100. I know it's a tough one because everything costs more than $100.
Yeah. I mean, are we talking?
Well, since you're multi, I mean, it could be anything. You could be like, well, I just love my goggles.
You could go like nutrition. Yeah, nutrition is the fourth sport. Mm-hmm. Goggles are always important.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite piece of nutrition? What's your favorite recovery nutrition?
God, recovery nutrition.
Mm-hmm. As soon as you get off of a 4-hour bike ride and you're like, I'm just spent. What's the first thing you grab?
Sometimes it's chocolate milk.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
Were they one of your sponsors at some point?
No.
Oh, you just like it?
They did a big sponsorship in Ironman like years and years ago, but
yep.
I mean, it's proteins and it's sugar and it tastes good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What else do you want?
That's like, that's recovery, but as long as you get some calories.
What's your favorite piece of cycling equipment that's under $100? Because that's a hard one.
God, is anything in cycling under $100?
Exactly. Well, in the past, we've had bags, we've had gloves, bar tapes, glasses, and then sometimes people fudge and be like, well, it's not under $100, but I really love this item.
Man.
Or this tire.
I don't, like, let's set price aside.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
Like, because we can't hyper, like, everybody, price. It's like, what value does it bring?
Okay.
Like, is it going to make you a better athlete? Like, is it really worth the dollar? Mm-hmm. And I think, like, I've ridden some of the 3D printed saddles.
Mm.
I really think those are like game changers. Mm-hmm. I've ridden the same saddle, tri saddle, is like a specialized tri tip saddle, for 15 years now. And like these new 3D printed saddles, because your weight, like the padding isn't all the same, like you don't get the same hot spots. Like, I really think that's something that maybe, like, I've really liked riding those saddles.
So what 3D printed saddle are you riding?
So like a specialized, God, they're
I don't know the name of it,
saddle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Those have been really been like just technologies that are coming out. 3D printing is something that's got a lot of potential, and 3D printing in saddles, was unique, but then actually getting to try them out.
It's the real deal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those, certified Piedmontese, like their team has got the coolest gear. So being able to try some of that stuff out has been like, that you know, you cool. normally wouldn't see it and you go, oh man, that's pretty expensive. I don't know if I want to spend that, but like, yeah.
If you're going to spend money, good bib shorts, a bike fit, a good seat.
Yeah.
Good shoes. Like your contact points need to be dialed. Cause if not, it makes the entire experience suck. Yeah. For
I
mean, sure.
I think you kind of have to set price aside and get something that works. Cause then you're going to want to do it. It's going to be more enjoyable and you're not going to hate it as much.
For sure.
Yeah.
Hardest event you've ever done.
Man, I paced Shane Peed on an Ultraman. I didn't have to do it, but that was a hell of an event. And so that's a 3-day, it's like more than two Ironmans. I'm going to get distance totally off, but it's like 6.5 mile swim and 95 mile bike the first day. Second day is like close to 200 mile bike. And then the third day is like a double marathon.
Yeah, 50, I think it's a double.
52 miles. So
basically you go around the entire island of Kona.
Yeah. Yeah. We did the one in Scottsdale.
Oh, nice.
Which is, it was a really cool track. Like you're up, I think north at a lake and then you kind of bike around the area and then, so it's all kind of like on the outskirts of Phoenix.
You do loops
and
Scottsdale. Like that?
It wasn't even loops. Okay. So they found like, that's enough, amazing. Like, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Smoke did that in the World Championships last year for a guy. And he was like, dude, you just, I was like, that always has like interest to me. Like it would be miserable, but I could see how it's doable. He's like, dude, it's a different
beast. It's a commitment.
That's what he said. He's like, it is wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how much of that did you actually ride or run with him at all? Cause Smoke was able to run with him the last day.
Yeah. We ran with him the last day. And then most of the time you're with them or very close to them. You got a kayaker out there, you're prepping all the food and all and so we took a van around and we were cooking bacon and, like beef bacon and eggs and all sorts of food, like as he's running.
That's a miserable 3 days. That's wild.
Yeah. That's probably the toughest event I've
been part of.
Yeah. I'd say the next, the Norseman. My personal one's like the effort at Maryland, the effort in Kona, probably the two biggest.
What's your favorite place to ride?
Some mountains somewhere. Anywhere mountains.
What's your favorite state to ride in? Mountain bikes. Because I know you guys go home and ride and you guys have taken great vacations and ridden.
Yeah, unfortunately, I haven't gotten a ton of mountain biking like in the mountains. The Beaver Creek race is really cool. It's the lake is like 7,000 feet and you go up to like 11,000 feet. So it's like straight up the mountain at a ski resort and then you bomb down single track. And super so that's super fun.
That would be super fun.
Mountain biking in Montana was a lot of fun because there's a lot of BLM land and you can just go out and ride. But I wasn't as competent back then.
Right. So you take advantage of it if you get to go back now.
Yeah.
What's up your like a bucket list event for you to do? Do you have one that's like out there? Like at some point I got to go do this. God. Well, you said the adventure race.
Mulvino, Mulvino was for sure a bucket race list.
The adventure race, the big
Roth,
one.
Roth is always cool. Like
if I was going to do another full, I think that's the one I would, I don't ever have it. I don't know if I'll ever do another full, but if I did, I think I would try to figure out a way to make it happen there.
Yeah. There's like the top 10 Ironman in the world. Like I thought Wisconsin was one of them because it's in the university and a ton of support. There's Penticton, Canada, which the whole town got around and it's beautiful Canadian mountains.
That'd
and,
be cool.
And passes. Hawaii is on the list for sure. Roth is on the list.
Yeah. Roth looks so fun. Yeah. And it's fast and looks super supported and fun and it looks like just a good experience, not so much the race. Like the environment is what you would be there for, which would be so cool.
And that's, again, a little mindset change is like the environment. It's like go and enjoy the environment and you'll enjoy the race.
Right. Do you have a dream bike?
Oh, I don't know. Those Cervelo Sparrows are pretty cool.
I like them. Yeah. They're sweet.
KDEX, like, I just like the goofiness of that. That would be pretty cool. I got the P5X that I've enjoyed the last few years.
Yeah, you've had that for a while.
It's been a really good bike.
And what gravel bike are you riding?
A Ventum GS1, and then I've got to ride the Time. I forget which model that was. And then I borrowed Ryan Lipa's Cervelo Sparrow, mm-hmm. which was like all tricked out. Mm. It was cool.
Had all the stuff on it.
Yeah.
We'll end on this. If you were talking, let's just go for a multi-sport and brand new triathlete, what would be a piece of advice that you'd give them?
So many pieces of advice. Mm-hmm. Like don't take it too serious. And like just, you got different gears, so don't always go tempo at your aerobic threshold, because it's like you're getting a really good workout and you feel tired, but you're also going to get injured and you're going to be like a one gear guy. So you have to have those hard days, you have to have those easy days, the moderate days, and the balance. So you have to learn to change gears instead of just like one tempo.
Well, I said that was the last one, but finishing it up with that, what's your favorite workout that you've ever done or that you do? Like you're like on the bike, this is the workout that I love. It's miserable or it may be great, but I love this workout.
Man, I like my 40-mile loop. Mm. I could do a 2-hour tempo on that in the dead of summer. So you got to have like, yeah, I used to like sleep in, have breakfast, and then start my ride at like noon. Mm. So make sure it's good and hot.
Uh-huh.
And then you really have to like nail the nutrition part. So it's not just biking and effort and power. Then it's also the nutrition part.
Do you like just like, I'm going to smash the hills, or you just ride as a pretty hard tempo the entire like?
Try to carry momentum into the hills. Mm-hmm. And really that's where you can make up some time. And
what do you do on the hills? What's the technique that you use on the hills to like focus on? Because that's something I see so much with especially newer triathletes, because no one's ever taught them. They don't ride in groups, so they don't pick things up that to help them ride a hill more efficiently.
Yeah, I think, and that's, it's all technique. So I don't think you get that on the trainer, right? Yeah, so it's out in the real world that you really learn that stuff. But it's, I think, you know, as you come into the hill, you kind of overpower into it and you don't downshift until a little bit past of where you normally would.
Mm.
You raise your power, I don't even know if this percentage is right, just say like 10 or 15% over what you would do. So if it's 225, you go 240, 250, and settle into that rhythm. And then you don't stop until you've crested the hill, flattened or going down.
Mm-hmm.
So you're carrying that little bit of momentum up and over. So if you stop because you see the top, it's like, then you slow yourself down. You got to carry it up and over. Just like, again, the coaches at the beginning of my, it's like you always crash that last mile. So you got to picture that finish line a mile past the actual finish line.
Right.
Run through the finish line.
Yep, for sure. And I see that with cyclists all the time. They get close to the top or at the top and they just back off to start, or they just keep in the same gear because it was kind of hard, right? And then they don't start shifting until they get going down the hill. And I'm like, but if you can start shifting before you get to the top of the hill, and let's say at the bottom of the hill, we're all going to be at 30 miles an hour, just for a random number. But if I can get to 30 halfway down the hill and you don't get to 30 till the bottom of the hill, I'm going to carry that more momentum farther and I'm going to be going faster over that period. And it's like, oh yeah, that does make sense. So I agree. It's pedaling over the top is so important.
Yeah.
Yeah. And shifting usually before you think you need it, because you see people and they just stay in the same gear and they go like to 85, 80, 75, 60, and then they never get on top of the gears again.
Yeah.
That's why they're so jacked when they get up there. Yeah. So you self-coach now?
Yeah.
For the most part.
I guess you'd call that. If I get, four hours a week, I don't even know.
Is that all you're getting coaching to do now?
Yeah.
Life of a businessman.
Yep. That's it.
Well, cool, man. Thanks for taking time. I know you're busy.
Yeah.
Good luck with the new company. I'm excited to see where that goes. And I'm excited to see you out on some trails. I'm going to get you into some just mountain bike races now.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Cyclist.
Uh-huh.
I can do that.
All right. Cool, man. Thanks.
Thanks.